me, Collins.
This is Peter B. Collins stepping out of retirement mode to bring you two special podcasts today. It's Friday, February 19th, 2021. And just a couple of days ago, it was announced that right-wing radio host Rush Limbaugh has died of lung cancer. And as you're about to learn, I have a history with Rush Limbaugh, and this podcast is an archived recording of an interview I did with Limbaugh in 1991. I was the afternoon host at KNBR, an AM station in San Francisco, and Rush had been on the air 9 to noon for about 9 months at this point. And I find this interview interesting myself. I don't spend a lot of time listening to recordings of myself from the past. But I dug this out of the archives, which is a stack of reel-to-reel tapes rotting in my garage. And I want to thank Ben Manila, my friend and radio producer of some note, who was able to loan me his studio. And he has an ancient reel-to-reel tape deck. I dubbed it into the MP3 format and brought it to my old studio here, where I am going to upload this to the podcast when I complete it. And a couple of other people I want to thank. Mary Finn, I believe, was my producer at this time. If not, it was another fine person named Liz Einbinder. And I want to give them credit for helping me produce this show at the time. I want to give you a little context, because when they first announced that Rush Limbaugh would be added to KNBR, I cringed. They played us a demo tape in a staff meeting of Limbaugh doing one of his ugly, homeless updates. And it was just one of the many tasteless features that he used that he called entertainment. But I've always felt that Rush Limbaugh engaged in coded hate speech. Sometimes it wasn't so coded, it was blatant. And I'm releasing today a separate podcast with commentary about Rush Limbaugh, the experiences I had, and his negative impact on American media and politics. And to set the stage as you get ready to listen to this interview, and it's only half an hour long, we conducted the interview over an hour, but in AM radio with the news break, the sports breaks, the endless commercials, we had less than 34 minutes to talk. And understand that I was working without a contract. I had tried to negotiate with the management there. They were paying me pretty well, but they wouldn't agree to remove onerous terms from the contract that they offered me, and I said no. And so I knew that I was at risk, that there's only so far I could go in taking on this national radio star who was very, very popular among right-wingers, and especially the right-wing management of the radio station. The general manager was a slimy guy named Tony Salvador, and he only came in to visit my radio show two or three times over the course of my employment there. This was one of them. He and program director Bob Agnew kicked my producer out of her booth, and the way the studio was configured, they were in direct eye contact with Rush Limbaugh, not with me. My eye contact was with the technician who was running the board. So it was a very, very difficult situation for a guy like me. And as I listen back to the tape, I find a guy named Peter B. Collins who was pretty cocky and who went toe-to-toe with this national star who was critical to the ratings of the radio station. And I could prick around the edges, but I knew I couldn't burst the bubble of this pompous individual. And the other part of it that is fascinating is that during these endless commercial breaks and sports breaks, I chatted with a very different guy. He admitted that his radio persona was an act, largely constructed of bombast, overblown claims of just how great he is, talent on loan from God. And at one point, he candidly said, "Peter, I'm going to ride this thing as far as I can." And if you listen to my other podcast released today, you will learn that Rush Limbaugh was cast into a predetermined role, a role developed by extensive market research. This was not simply a matter of his being discovered by Ed McLaughlin, the former president of ABC Radio. He was found to fit into a role that market research showed would likely work on a national basis. So with that, I take you back to September of 1991, the studios of KNBR in San Francisco. And I believe this is one of very few interviews that Rush Limbaugh gave to a liberal. You'll notice that I interrupt him repeatedly. I was in some cases relentless in communicating to him that I don't share his views, and in particular, the tone that he set on his radio show.
On the Giant 68 KNBR, I'm Kim Wunderly, Skyview Traffic.
Ralph Barbieri here, inviting you to join me tonight on Sports Phone 68 right after the Giants-Braves game. And now, speaking of legends, here's our own afternoon talk show legend. That's stretching it a bit, but anyway, here's Peter B. Collins.
You ever heard this one, Rush?
Yeah, I've heard this one.
Whether you love him or hate him, Rush Limbaugh is in your face radio. This guy knows exactly what he's doing, and he's doing it very well. Now heard on 400 stations all over the damn place, including the Giant 68 KNBR twice a day. Just a few years ago, Rush, who replaced Morton Downey at a radio station in our state capital, was building his act in Sacramento just like Ronald Reagan did before him. Rush combines evangelistic conservatism with superb radio skills, a commanding presence, and, I might add, relentless self-promotion. Rush reminds me of some of the great radio preachers I've heard, like the Reverend Ike, Reverend Billy Graham, and Garner Ted Armstrong. Only Rush doesn't ask you to send cash. It's kind of like a turbocharged Paul Harvey. In case you haven't figured it out, Rush and I don't agree on lots of things. Nevertheless, I've been looking forward to talking with him and telling him directly some of the critical comments I've generously shared with our listeners on various occasions in the past. Rush, it's great to have you here at the Giant 68 KNBR.
Thank you. As I've been saying to everybody I've met, and everybody's been nice as they can be, I love being here, too. I really do. I lived in Sacramento for 4 years, and I came down here as often as I could. I love everything about this city. It's just, I think, one of the most beautiful geological spots in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
And one of the points that I really wanted to make with people today is that there is room enough on this radio station, and indeed in this great country of ours, for both of us. We don't agree on everything, and we'll explore some of those subjects as the hour progresses. We'll take some phone calls from listeners. First up, I wanted to hammer you, though, for your claim to having the best bumper music in America. Rush, I take it personally. You can slam talk show hosts like you do, you know, that we're all worthless and useless, but my bumper music is very important to me.
The bumper music is, you know, music is one of these things where there's nothing really wrong about it because it's taste. I mean, just if somebody likes country music or jazz doesn't make them deficient in any way, or superior to anybody else in any way. I think when I say best, Peter, I get so caught up in how much of the stuff I'm playing I enjoy. I get up. The heartbeat starts. But I've made it a almost a policy to try to avoid criticizing other people who do talk shows.
Wait a minute, Rush. Just last week I was driving into work and I heard you say that you say more in 5 seconds than any other talk show host in the country says in a whole hour.
No. I say more in 5 seconds than most hosts say in a whole show.
I heard any. It was a pretty exclusive comment,
that's,
Rush.
That's not a blanket criticism. Once again, that's just one of these little stabs from my sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do enjoy your hyperbole, I have to say, and there's no question about that. And I asked some of our listeners to write in with questions that they have for Rush, and one of the most common is put this way by a guy named Craig Griffin. He says, how much of the right hand of God tied behind my back, and he didn't even quote you correctly, type of bluster do you believe about yourself, and how much of it is part of your act?
In the first place, I don't have an act in the sense that I am portraying somebody other than who I am. I mean, everything I say on this show is, or on my program, is part of me, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff about talent on loan from God, I mean, if you walked into my office and I stood up to introduce myself to you, I wouldn't say, hi, Rush Limbaugh with talent on loan from God. Who are you? Nice to meet you. I mean, this is showbiz. I really believe that radio is turned on for three reasons. I think people turn it on to be entertained. And some people say what I do is shtick, and other people say it's an act. It's just my sense of humor. That's just the way I sometimes self-deprecate. Other times I go into this pompous arrogance. But it's all intended lightheartedly. Talent on loan from God, and if you examine that, I do believe that I am what I am because of the grace of God. I think I'm the result of creation. Mm-hmm. So talent on loan, and I'm not going to be here forever. I'm going to go back someday.
Right.
And what I have, therefore, is on loan. I mean, I seriously mean it, but I'm not trying to make a statement with
it. It's a great line.
Yeah.
It is. No question about it.
It's one of these things. You know, there's a lot of noise out there. And by that, I mean there are a lot of shows, there are a lot of stations, there are a lot of options for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to cut through it all.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I used to work at the same studios in Chicago with Paul Harvey, and he once referred to the music that we played on our FM station there as music to steal hubcaps by. And he felt that his show had to rise above that. And he was really glad in Chicago at the time, WLS, which your show is carried on, was a top 40 station. And his show was not on there. It is now. But it was on a country station at the time. And he said he felt much more comfortable with that than being on a hubcap-stealing music station.
Well, that's interesting. When I say there's a lot of noise out there, I look at it not the people on this station, but the people on other stations in markets where the show is. I mean, that's what our objective is. My objective is to do what I can to make every station I'm on a winner.
Mm-hmm.
And that means beating the competition within the market. I'm not interested in tearing down or beating or cutting through whatever noise I might think exists on stations which carry the show.
In case you can't figure it out, we're talking with Rush Limbaugh here on the Giant 68 KNBR, the unmistakable man. Here's another letter. This is from Dennis Deaver, who describes himself as a local Poblam puker. He says, I'm well aware, as are all of your listeners with more than a primary education, that your show is 100% satire. However, the callers that make it through your screening are obviously not educated beyond the high school level and don't understand that you're one big comedy show in bad taste. Now, before you respond to that, another thought that I've expressed over the 9 or 10 months since you've been on our station is that your sense of humor is what it must feel like for a conservative American to watch Saturday Night Live or go to the movies and see the parade of liberal-based comedy that many of us think is so funny, but has to upset people from the other point of view. And when I listen to you, Rush, I often think of it that way, that this is what I must sound like to very conservative people.
Well, I hadn't really thought of it that way. I think that's probably very astute of you to have made that connection. I think, suffered the slings and arrows of critics such as the person in that letter. I find it something very common about people like that is that they find it necessary to insult my audience. My audience has to be a bunch of idiots. Otherwise, I wouldn't have as large an audience as I do. No reasonable, responsible, intelligent person would put up with what this Limbaugh guy is.
But you yourself have said that you have the most carefully screened show in America.
Well, it is, but we screen the calls not for content, not for
politically correct thinking
or ideologies or whatever. We screen. Look, see if I can do this in a short period of time because I know you get a break here. I'm on radio. There are certain things you have to do on radio to succeed. If I really wanted to change America, if I wanted to implement my ideals, if I wanted to impose them on people, I'd run for office. I'd get myself where policy implementation takes place and try to influence that. But I'm on radio, and I have to do certain things, as we all do, to succeed here. I want to succeed. I mean, one of the measure of success here that we're all interested in that we can't deny is numbers, ratings. You have to get them. I look at my show as an entertainment forum for people, and I screen calls to find the best call. You know what in my philosophy, you know what the purpose of a good call is on my show? It's to make me look good. I will tell you flat out, this show is not about what anybody else but me thinks. I'm not trying to discover what America thinks because it's impossible. There's no talk show host in the world who can tell you what his community or his neighborhood thinks based on what happens on his show. And so I'm not even laboring under that misconception. Calls are there to make me look good, to bring up interesting things. There's no public service aspect. There's no First Amendment aspect that I care about regarding it. And we're not looking for people who agree. In fact, we strive for people who disagree.
We'll talk more about that as we continue. Rush Limbaugh, my guest. And yes, we will go to the phones in our second half hour, and you can talk directly to Rush Limbaugh. It's 1:15 now at the Giant 68 KNBR. Let's go to sports, and Bruce McGowan standing by. KNBR Sports Time 1:15. Howdy, Bruce.
How you doing? And
fine.
We've got some football news for you, Peter. You know, the 49ers win over the Chargers yesterday. Certainly impressive, and had to be a cause for relief among the faithful.
The 24th Street Festival, 24th and Mission Street, Sunday, this coming weekend in San Francisco. Next hour, B.B. King will be on the show with us. He is the king of the blues. Looking forward to talking with him once again. My guest is Rush Limbaugh, the host of the syndicated program that airs every weekday morning, 9 to noon, and again from midnight to 3, the replay, here on the Giant 68 KNBR, and by the latest count, some 399 or so other stations.
Yeah, I think it's actually 403 now.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in Sacramento, as I mentioned at the top, and you did a show there, and then you were, as I understand it, discovered by Ed McLaughlin, and you went to New York and started EIB, and you launched your program. You mentioned to me during the sports break that you never thought that your politics would be as significant a factor in your success as it has been.
No, I really didn't. All of this has come about as a surprise to me in many ways. When I was in Sacramento, and I'd been there about 2 years or 2.5 years, and I enjoyed life there as much as I've ever enjoyed living anywhere else.
It's a great time, isn't it?
I had become a functioning member of the community, and I owned a home, and all the things that they say are not possible to attain in broadcasting because you need to live such a vagabond existence to succeed, I found there. And all of a sudden the phone rings, and it's Ed McLaughlin from New York. He wants me to meet him here in San Francisco at the Nikko Hotel. So I did and came down. And it was the most agonizing 4 months while I decided what I wanted to do, and we started negotiating the deal, and that was a hassle. And during all of this, I pondered, all right, if I do this, what am I going to have to do to succeed? Because I want to stand out. And if I'm going to do it, I want to be the best at it. I want to cream all these other people at it. We're going to try something that had never been tried, syndicating a program in the daytime. All these other people are at night when there's no performance standard. And I want to be clear about this. Those people don't have to get ratings one in order to stay on the air. All they're there to do is fill time so the station doesn't have to sign off or so the station doesn't have to pay anybody. And I was going to be measured by a quite different standard. So I said, well, what am I going to have to do to succeed and have any credibility with these people in their arena?
Were you a conservative before you launched the national show?
Oh, yeah. I've been a conservative all my life, my whole family.
No conversion?
No. I mean, look, everything I say is from the bottom of my heart. I never make it up. I don't lie about it. I don't say things because I view the audience would receive it more favorably, I don't care what the audience thinks and try to fit their mold. I just put myself out there every day and let it fall.
I hear it, yeah.
And I decided that I'm going to have to be sharper, more informed, faster, better at executing the fundamentals of broadcast. The last thing I thought would be a factor was my conservatism. I misunderstood just how hungry a lot of people in the country are for
an unabashed conservative media program. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people in this country think the media is liberally biased, and it's true, but I never understood just how aggravated they are by it. So I think I benefit from the fact that I'm the only one doing what I do on a national basis.
Keep in mind that I'm one of what I think are a few remaining liberals doing talk shows in San Francisco, and this is a liberal town.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I agree with you that the overall media is slanted, but in talk radio, I think conservatives are at least 50-50, if not stronger numbers than liberals or moderates.
Well, they are, but on national talk radio, and again, that's the arena in which I compete,
right.
name an ideologue in national talk radio anyway. I mean, I can't think of one.
Right.
We have financial experts, we have dating experts, we have shrinks, we have people who interview other people, but I don't think we have an ideologue. I have a theory, though, as to why it is, Peter, and I think that one of the reasons why liberalism isn't working in a lot of places where it's this is just the result of popularity, and liberalism is not popular so much, I think, in many ways, because what liberals do is criticize the country. They make fun of the values that most people hold dear. They're always looking for something wrong in the country, and
now, let me stop you right there.
All right.
Some of what you're saying applies. I don't doubt that at all. But you just spoke, as you often do, with a very broad brush. I am probably a liberal. I don't really care about the definition that much, but especially in contrast to you, I'm a liberal, okay? But liberals are very different. I'm going to give you an example. I am a liberal who doesn't buy Jesse Jackson's act, okay? I don't think that your constant mimicking of him is a good thing to do. I think it borders on bad taste. It is subject to racist interpretation. However, the main thrust of that is that Jesse Jackson is not the Messiah, either for Black America or for liberal America. And on that, you and I would agree.
However,
but you often lump us all together.
Well,
see, I don't think that conservatives are monolithic. I don't think that Judge Thomas, because he is Black, has to toe the line of the NAACP or any other Black agenda-setting organization.
Well, then I don't think your liberalism is as pure as others.
Well, I can live with that.
But I really do think that in terms, again, let's stay focused here for talk radio for just a moment. For the longest time, most of the people in this country grew weary and have grown tired of people saying it's okay to burn the flag, or of people saying that the country is always wrong, regardless the circumstances when it involves itself militarily abroad. Evidence of this was the Gulf War. I think it was a turning point. The anti-war protesters were outnumbered, they were outshouted, and they were practically rendered impotent.
But I don't think those of us who opposed the war didn't have some serious thoughts that were worth being considered by the administration and by others.
I'm not commenting on the intellectual capability or quality of your dissent. I'm simply saying that in terms of doing a radio show that people want to listen to, my theory is that the reason why there aren't a lot of massively successful liberals, which you have just admitted, is because most of liberalism is dissent. And it is. It's dissent from the status quo. It is people unhappy with Bush and Reagan and constantly trashing the 80s as the decade of selfishness and greed.
You revere the 80s as if they were a period of germination of great American values, and I think it's a mixed bag.
Well,
I think there were some accomplishments during the Reagan years, but we also are paying the bill for budget deficits, for military spending, for all kinds of things that, you know, were not taken care of during that period.
If you want to get specifically there, I don't think the budget deficit has anything to do with Reagan. It has everything to do with Congress. Reagan signed some of the largest tax increases in the history of this country on the premise that he would get spending cuts that he never got. TEFRA, 86, is an example.
Mm-hmm.
After the tax rate reductions, the coffers of the federal treasury went from $515 billion in 1980 to $915 billion in 1988 after he left office. All those tax cuts caused almost a doubling in revenues from taxation. The deficit problem exists because of spending, not because of, and not particularly defense spending, just because Ronald Reagan cut taxes.
We got to stop here. They're waving at us. They want to play some commercials or something. We've got phone lines jammed, and we haven't even given out the number. We'll go to the phones after our break. It's 128 now at the Giant 68 KNBR. My guest, Rush Limbaugh.
On the Giant 68 KNBR, I'm Kim Wunderlich, Skyview Traffic.
You're tuned to the Giant Giant 68 KNBR.
It's 1:35 now, the Giant 68 KNBR. We're Northern California's sports leader, and the Giants are on the air again this afternoon, 4:05, the pregame time from hot Atlanta. I'm Peter B. Collins, and next hour, B.B. King, the King of the Blues, will be my guest. We've invited Lucille to join us, and we'll celebrate in advance his upcoming birthday, which will be part of the Blues Festival celebration this weekend at Fort Mason. Also, Representative Tom Campbell, he calls himself a new conservative, whatever that means, the Republican from Palo Alto and a front runner in the race for U.S. Senate. He'll be my guest 3 o'clock this afternoon here on KNBR. Rush Limbaugh here until 2, and Rush, check this out. You know, your repeated workovers of Ted Kennedy amuse even me.
Really?
I want you to know that a lefty like me can get a big laugh out of Ted Kennedy because, you know, on the left, we're not as comfortable as you might think with some of these people. I mentioned Jesse Jackson a minute ago. Ted Kennedy has never been a hero of mine. I mean, occasionally he and I agree on politics. But as far as a leader, as an individual, never bought his
act.
All
right, I want to go back to Jesse Jackson very quickly here before you open the phones, because you said something that I hear somewhat frequently, and that is that my pronunciation of his name might be construed as racist. And
the Reverend.
I frankly see, I do not understand how in the world my pronunciation of his name as the Reverend Jackson in any way applies racism. And when you know,
well, you borrow his language when you use Governor Cuomo and a few
others. Well, that's to avoid being called a racist.
Yeah, but we know what is behind that.
The point is, you know, you have people in this country. You said that you find it difficult to support much of what the Reverend Jackson does and says and so forth. But remember now, when I talk about liberals and the Reverend Jackson, I never see Jesse Jackson criticized in the national media, and that's what I'm playing off on.
You're right.
The Reverend Jackson, I don't know if you people know this or not, recently demanded that the United Nations move in to ensure that D.C. becomes a state because blacks in D.C. have it worse than they do in South Africa. Now, that's ridiculous, and I don't know how long it is that people are going to continue to take this man seriously.
He's been an embarrassment since the day that Martin Luther King died, and he tried to pick up the mantle.
But I don't hear, don't take this personally, but I mean, you say you criticize him, and there are some
I did to his face earlier this year. He was on the show.
I don't hear that. I see him getting away with this stuff. I see him getting away with all of it, and so that's I think the focal point of my comment is that I am reacting to the way I see these people treated in the so-called media.
I get your point on that. I want to move on to something else. Why don't you, a caller mentioned this to you one time, make fun of John Sununu, Dan Quayle, Ronald Reagan is a guy who, even if you love him, is a caricature who can be the source of humor. Why do you stay away from those people and simply drive piles into Ted Kennedy?
Well, please don't try to make a moral equivalence here between Kennedy and Reagan or Kennedy and Quayle.
They're public figures. They're public figures. You're a funny guy. Why do you only find humor in the icons of the left?
Well, in all honesty here, it's because I love Reagan, and I very much appreciate what he stood for, and I am sick and tired of the ceaseless ending character assassination and malignment that this man has received, and I don't need to add to it. I need to defend it. People say that what I do is attack my targets. And I don't do that, Peter. I get up and read the newspaper like everybody else, and I looked at who is attacking somebody. The militant environmentalists are trying to attack the timber industry. Militant vegetarians are attacking the beef industry. So I simply respond. I defend.
But often in responding to the militants, you write off an entire movement. Here's a letter from a guy in Stockton, and I won't go into all the details, but essentially he says, well, hey, you quit smoking. You recognize that you were hurting your own personal environment, but you write off even moderate people who want to save the planet, who want to conservation.
I've been very clear about this. The people with whom I have a disagreement are the extremists who wish to damage the capitalistic system of this country in order to see their remedies implemented. I am not at all for dirty water or dirty air. I'm not at all for not caring about it, but I do not think that you need to shut down the U.S. economy or start closing businesses or losing people, having people lose jobs in order to fix the environment. I don't think we're in doomsday. I don't think it's a crisis. I don't think it's fragilely balanced. And I think that capitalism and freedom and the American way of life are the solution to the messes, the messes that we humans make, not the solution being going back to the horse and buggy days and stop driving our automobiles and so forth.
Okay, got your point. Let's go to the phones here before some people get really burned. Ada in San Anselmo, you're first. Good afternoon. You're on KNBR, the Giant 68, with Rush Limbaugh.
Hello, Rush.
Hi, Ada.
Unlimited negative ditto.
Ooh.
I spoke with you. I've been listening to you for 3 years, and I pick you up when I'm in the Bay Area, when I'm down in the desert on KPIS. And I talked with you once. I gave you a report card. I'm the retired teacher, and you didn't do very well with me, by me, on that. Now, I have three items I wish to discuss with you.
Ada, you're going to have to pick one and make it brief.
Okay. Oh, dear. I hate to pick one. All right. Why do you continue, if liberalism is dead and if liberals are meaningless, why do you continue attacking Kennedy, Dukakis,
Madam,
Cuomo, and so forth?
Madam, by no means is liberalism dead, nor have I ever said it is.
What are you afraid of? Why do you have to pick
liberals,
on the Kennedy?
Liberals, I don't pick
is
on the Kennedy.
The
I do not pick on them. I simply recite what they are doing. Liberals still control the institutions of this country, and as such, I mean, there is still an Alan Cranston running around. There is still a Howard Metzenbaum. There's still a Joseph Biden. I mean, I have political disagreements with these people. And if you've looked, the U.S. Congress, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, especially the House, for 37 years has been run by liberal Democrats. And they're by no means impotent or by no means on the wane. I think that they may not win, be able to win the White House, but they still have a lot of power in the country, and I see fit to oppose it.
Line 13, Bill in Los Altos. Good afternoon. You're on the Giant 68 KNBR.
Hi, Peter. Ditto's Rush.
Thank you.
Peter.
Yes.
Why is it, in your opinion, constitutional to burn the American flag? And
there was a U.S. Supreme Court ruling which was very clear about that.
All right.
So it's not my opinion, it's the U.S. Supreme Court. Go ahead.
Okay, do you feel that this is what our forefathers had in mind when they wrote the Constitution?
No, and in fact, I never support anyone who chooses to burn the flag. I simply have remarked that they do have the legal right to do so under our First Amendment.
Okay. Thank you.
And I also find it distressing when people, for example, at the anti-war rallies earlier this year in San Francisco, burned the flag. I think that that's a disservice to all of us, and I don't support it. I simply feel that there is a constitutional right. I also don't think that we need a constitutional amendment to protect the flag. I think we're all big enough to handle the kind of freedom of expression that goes on in this country. More coming up with Rush Limbaugh, and we'll take more of your calls, just as many as we can, here on the Giant 68 KNBR. Peter B. Collins on the Giant 68 KNBR. It's 148. My guest, Rush Limbaugh. And, Rush, do you have voicemail? Do you get voicemail?
I do.
It's kind of a nuisance, but this is a call that was left for me a couple of months back. I thought you might get a kick out of it.
Yes, my name is Lucille Cassingham, and I live in Grass Valley. I'm an expatriate from Santa Clara Valley. I normally have always, for years and years, listened to KGO Radio. However, when I am up here in Grass Valley and I am outside, I cannot listen to KGO Radio. I have to listen to KNBR, which is fine in the morning because Rush Limbaugh is on. But I just want to know why on earth you hate the United States so much. This guy that you have on today, you have said nothing but negative.
I don't recall which guest it was.
Can't you see good in, I mean, you see negative in absolutely everything that anybody that's a Republican does. And I am so tired of it. I listen because you're the opposite point of view. But
now, she goes on and on, and one of her big complaints was is that I have openly disagreed with you over a period of time about various issues, about condom distribution, about the politics of the Gulf War, et cetera. And I'd like you to set things straight here. Are you offended when somebody like me on one of your affiliate stations disagrees with you?
Nope.
Is it taboo?
No.
Is it sacrilegious?
No. No. The only, I probably shouldn't even answer this because it doesn't even happen here, but there are, and it doesn't happen much anymore, when we were new, first year and a half, generally for my show to be taken, somebody lost a job.
Right.
And that meant that the people at the station resented me.
Mm-hmm.
And they resented that there's a lot of jealousy and envy as part of human nature, and a lot of people think they're the ones that ought to be doing this, and I'm just the result of a stroke of luck. And there was a lot of stuff on the air, hey, this Limbaugh guy is a wacko, don't listen to this, we wish we weren't carrying this. So that kind of stuff, I think, makes no sense
mm-hmm.
from a business point of view. But disagreement, no, absolutely not.
Okay, I'm glad. I'll continue then. Warren in San Francisco, thanks for holding. You're on the Giant 68 KNBR with Rush Limbaugh.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Rush, how can one get in touch with you in front of a conservative audience, say, tomorrow? And can I get through somehow? I've tried to call you many times and take you on every issue under the sun, but I can't get through. Could you give me a quicker...
In other words, what you want to do, you want to talk to my audience because you disagree with me about something, and
I
you...
I want to play on your turf, not Peter B's.
Well, there's really no shortcut to it.
Warren, I'm hurt. This is my turf. Come on, let's play.
Peter, I'm so sorry. Let me
why don't you just make a point in 30 seconds or less?
Okay. One question about October Surprise. I hope you nail him on it. Wanted to ask him how he thinks this is a Democratic plot when it was a Republican that first broke the story in a book called October Surprise. Her name is Barbara Honegger.
Yep, she's been on our show. Go ahead, Rush.
Go ahead with what? Answering the October Surprise or the...
He's saying that you have said that it's a Democratic plot, and he's saying it was started by a Republican.
It's a Democratic plot. What I'm saying is that the Democrats can't seem to win the White House at the ballot box, and so ever since Watergate, their recipe has been try to find scandal someplace. Barbara Honegger may have announced her suspicions. There's not one shred of evidence on this, and Tom Foley, when he announced the House investigation of it, cited that fact. There's not one shred of evidence. That's why we must investigate. People think that Jimmy Carter lost because of the October Surprise. Another thing coming. Look at the economy Jimmy Carter was running for president. There's your answer as to why he lost.
All right, backing up for a moment. I agree with you that there is no hard evidence of the October Surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But given the nature of the charges, that they amount to treason, treason committed by people who were not elected to any office
by
at that time.
Who was making the charges, Peter? I mean, the people making the charges are people themselves who have been convicted of breaking the law. They run guns,
And Barbara Honegger have not been convicted of anything. They didn't break the law.
I think Gary Sick is the tool of the public broadcasting system. That op-ed piece of his in the New York Times happened to appear the very night a bogus television show ran on PBS with much of this disinformation. In Gary Sick's own book and in Zbigniew Brzezinski's own book about that period of time, they admit that they both, the Carter White House, prepared to pay $50 million in spare parts to the Iranians if it would get the hostages back. They admit that they were considering that which they accused the Reagan people of doing, for which there is no evidence.
But they held the office at that time, and the Reagan people were operating from outside.
Sure.
If they did anything that has been suggested, then we deserve to know. Don't you agree?
Am I a credible person?
Well,
do you think I'm a credible
person? Do we have an hour?
Suppose I say that I know that there's something in your background that you've done that would constitute a violation of the law, but I don't have any evidence.
Mm-hmm.
All I've got is a suspicion, and I'm doing it because I disagree with your politics and I'm resentful over your success or whatever.
But
that's all this is,
but
Peter.
If these are true, the whole basis of the election of Ronald Reagan and George Bush to office is tainted. And that deserves to be investigated.
You're going to impeach Reagan? You're going to make Reagan resign? Now, what are you going to do now?
I think that the record should be set straight and in time for the 1992 presidential race.
I guarantee you that if they conduct this investigation and they find that Casey met with the Iranians, the people of this country will applaud even more.
Well, that's the Ollie North syndrome, and you may be correct about
that. No, it's not
that.
The Ollie North syndrome. It's the fact that Jimmy Carter and his pals were trying for 4 years and failing miserably to get him out. And a person out of power, for you to believe this
intellectually... Not for 4 years, Russ. They'd only been in for
a
year and a half.
Okay, 3 years, Peter. The point is, for you to intellectually believe that people not in power could do and make promises and deliver more than people in power, it's an indictment of Carter's own impotence for you to think this thing's got any credence.
Well,
so either way
I think
you
that
go,
Carter, I think that Carter may come out of any investigation looking worse than he does now, and he's already got BCCI stains on his shirt.
But you just talked about the constitutionality of burning the flag and how you respect laws. You think accusations which are not backed up with any fact, which are not backed up with any substance, are grounds for investigation, be it against a person or a country or whatever?
I think there is significant basis to what has been offered, and I think it should be pursued. I do. Rush, we're just about out of time. I've got one more thing I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
Back during the Gulf War, there was a caller who called and talked with you, and at the end of it, he closed his call by saying, peace. And you just about went ballistic. The word peace really got you going. What is it about that concept that upsets you?
Wars are not fought for peace. The entire peace movement is, I think, exemplary of one of my prime areas of disagreement. That is, the peace movement is simply anti-U.S. The peace movement seeks peace by U.S. surrender, by virtue of U.S. disarmament and surrender. They don't seek peace by U.S. victory and wars are not fought for peace. Wars are fought for freedom. Peace does not equal the elimination of nuclear weapons. Peace equals the absence of threat. And by shouting peace and promising peace and hoping for peace does not make Saddam Hussein go away. Defeating him does.
No, but it's a great concept, isn't it?
Of course it's a great concept. Nobody opposes
it. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us. And I hope you can stop back sometime later in the week if you have time. Love to talk with you some more.
Thank you very much. Enjoy being here.
Thanks for all the calls here this afternoon, too. Sorry we didn't get to everybody. 155 at KNBR.
So there you have it. My archived interview from 1991 with the late Rush Limbaugh. And I have mixed feelings about playing Happy Trails. I'm not sure I extend this message to Mr. Limbaugh.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.